Hello, I'm Matthew. I'm the lead pastor here at Cedar Ridge, and thank you so much for joining us this morning. We're in a series called Stories of Comfort and Hope, and today we're going to look at Psalm 23, possibly one of the most famous passages of Scripture there is. So let's look at it together right now. We'll just jump straight in. Here's what it says. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his namesake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. As I mentioned, a very familiar psalm, and I read it in the New King James Version, which isn't a version we use very much at Cedar Ridge, actually, and there's good reason for that. But I think it retains the familiarity for sure, and some of the poetic forms that some of the other English translations miss out on. It's very prevalent in our culture generally, I think, this psalm, and it's often quoted or recited at funerals. It's not exactly a story. I mentioned this series is called Stories of Comfort and Hope, and it's not a narrative in the sense that some of the other passages we've looked at in this series are. But I think it is a story in many respects. It's the story of sheep with their shepherd. It's a metaphor for life, if you like. It's a psalm associated with David. The inscription on the psalm is a psalm of David. Doesn't necessarily mean that the biblical figure King David wrote the psalm, may have done, but it's certainly traditionally associated with him, as on many other psalms. And we know from the biblical record that David was a shepherd in his younger days as a boy and as a young man. And this psalm certainly has a lot of sort of shepherd insight in it, as we'll see as we unpack it a little bit. That metaphor of sheep and shepherd is it's a very common metaphor in the Hebrew Bible. If you look at, for instance, in Psalm 78, it says, but he brought his people out like a flock. He led them like sheep through the wilderness. So there's the analogy of God being the one who guides the people out of slavery and bondage in Egypt and leads them into the wilderness. And in the Middle East in those days, that's where sheep were often kept. Usually kept out in the dry, more barren wilderness areas. In the following Psalm, 79, it says, then we, your people, the sheep of your pasture, will praise you forever. From generation to generation, we will proclaim your praise. That term, the sheep of your pasture, is a very common refrain in the Hebrew Bible. It has some beautiful imagery with it, I think, of, you know, peace and tranquility and a loving, caring shepherd presiding over a flock. And Jesus picks up on these metaphors that were used for God. There were more metaphors than just sheep and shepherds, and Jesus picks up on many of them, but he particularly homes in on this theme of sheep and shepherd. In John chapter 10, verse 14, Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. That's the kind of phrase that got Jesus into a lot of trouble, because Jesus there is not just talking about God or talking about the metaphors for God. Jesus is saying, I embody the divine. You can understand how that would have got Jesus into a lot of hot water with the religious authorities. Even the term there where Jesus is saying, I am the good shepherd, just as he frequently said, I am the way, or I am the bread of life, or I am the truth. It's controversial language, because the term I am is closely associated with the expression for God that was so sacred it couldn't be spoken. And that expression is sometimes transliterated by in the English by YHWH, just the consonants. I'm not even going to pronounce the word that we often say in English, because it was so sacred that for the Hebrew people they would never speak it. But it looks like this in Hebrew. That is the first word of this psalm. The Lord is my shepherd. That term, the Lord, is this expression. It's like saying the great I am. is my shepherd. The Hebrew sense of God being the essence of being, being itself, if you like. So Jesus, by saying, I am the good shepherd, actually saying, I embody the divine essence. I embody this divine shepherdness, if you like. And of course, for us as followers of Jesus, we recognize that in Jesus. Jesus embodied the divine presence, invites us into that same journey, leads us on in that same kind of way. But that was at the time incredibly controversial. But because of that, what I want to do with this psalm is actually look at it through the lens of Jesus. I don't want to get desperately analytical about it. I think it's important we let the poetry woo us and comfort us and speak for itself. But before we sort of go through the psalm, and we'll touch on each aspect of it, I want to sort of set up why we're looking at it through the lens of Jesus. And firstly, as I said, I think, the text gives us permission because Jesus is saying, I am the good shepherd. So for us as followers of Jesus, it makes sense that we'd look at it that way. I think Jesus may well have had this psalm and other times when the sheep and shepherd metaphor is used in mind when he's speaking to the crowds. But Jesus, in that same passage where he says, I am the good shepherd, says this. It's a more extended passage. It says, very truly, I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter by the gate, but climbs in by some other way is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling them. Here we get some of the tension between Jesus and the religious leaders that's so evident. And again, you can understand why. But Jesus is saying here, not only am I the good shepherd, but my sheep know my voice. And this was well known at the time, and well known today. In the Middle East culture, sheep would know the voice of their shepherd. So different flocks would come together with different shepherds at nighttime or around watering holes and get mixed up. But then when the shepherd would walk off and call his sheep away, the right sheep from the right flock would follow him because they know and hear his voice. So what we're going to do here is listen for the voice of Jesus in this psalm. As we go through it, we're going to recognize that there are many other competing voices in our lives. That some of those voices are our own narratives about our life. Like we're not good enough. We've failed. Trouble's just around the corner. I've been forgotten. I mean, we have all sorts of narratives that we tell ourselves, and we also have all kinds of narratives from the culture around us, perhaps from other people around us, which is, you should have done better, I disapprove of you, you've upset me, or whatever it is. We have all kinds of narratives going on, right? And I've experienced this myself. I experience it all the time. And one interesting example of this, though, and the different voices we can listen to, is many years ago, I met for the first time with somebody who eventually became actually a close friend and a mentor and spiritual director in my life. But the first time I met them, I was probably about late 20s, early 30s, probably late 20s. And I felt like I'd failed at life. I'd made all sorts of mistakes, hurt a lot of people, hurt myself, experienced a lot of things, done a lot of things that I was ashamed of. And I was still struggling with the shame of that, even though I'd sort of come out of a lot of making those mistakes. And I felt the need to tell this person, look, I need to confess, here's what my life's been like. I need to give you a fair chance to reject me. That's what that was motivated by. And this person listened, and then they just said, wow, that's amazing. I think God must be so proud of you because you have endured and come through all that failure, all those mistakes, all that difficulty, all that struggle. You've come through it, and that's incredible. And you must be a very different person as a result of that. That was not a voice I was used to hearing. Certainly wasn't my voice, but it was a much more wholesome, much more healthy, and I think a much more true voice. It was the voice of Jesus to me. So we have these competing voices. And I think this psalm really helps us with our decision making around which voice we listen to. So as we go through it, we're going to sort of take each section at a time, listening for the voice of Jesus. Now, I think it's important we remember that we all hear in different ways. We all hear that voice in different ways. And we're not necessarily talking here about an audible voice. Some people experience that, and that's a wonderful thing. I've never experienced that myself. But I think we all experience inclinations, thoughts, feelings, intuitions, a sense of conviction, if you like, about things. That's often how God communicates, speaks in us and through us. So, Jesus, I think, alludes to the diverse way in which we hear in that very same passage. A little bit later on in the same chapter 10 of John, he says, "I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice. And there shall be one flock and one shepherd." So I think what Jesus is saying here is there's diversity, and we're not all the same. So we're all going to hear in different ways. Let's just bear that in mind as we go through this. Okay, so we're going to break the psalm down bit by bit. It starts off with "the Lord is my shepherd." That word shepherd is closely connected to the word for friend in Hebrew. I think that's significant because in the Middle Eastern culture, sheep did not were not taken into towns. They were kept out of towns, kept out of the more fertile farming areas as well, because farmers were worried they would eat crops or eat the vegetation and damage crops. So they were out in the wilderness, out in the more barren, infertile, rocky areas, and the shepherds would stay with them there and live with them 24/7. So there was this very intimate connection of sheep and shepherd. So this isn't just like an authority issue. This is a friendship issue as we think about shepherd as guide. It's my shepherd, and this is an intimate, personal connection. If you read a lot of commentaries about Psalm 23, many of them say that sheep are stupid, they're dirty, they get into trouble, they don't know what they're doing, and have a very negative view of sheep. And the inference is that, you know, we need a set of rules that we kind of blindly follow. Following God is all about blind obedience, because we don't know any better, and we're hopeless, we make mistakes. And of course we all make mistakes, but I don't think that's the insight of a shepherd about sheep in this psalm. I think sheep knew that actually sheep are not stupid, and research today shows that sheep are actually quite intelligent animals. Sheep can recognize up to 50 other sheep faces for up to 2 years. They can see a sheep and know that same sheep if they haven't seen them for 2 years. They recognize them. They've got quite sophisticated social hierarchies and interactions. There's lots of complexity and sophistication to sheep. So we shouldn't downplay sheep, just as we shouldn't downplay ourselves. We make mistakes, and we sometimes make mistakes frequently. But perhaps the voice of Jesus in this first beginning part is that the voice of compassion, the voice of a friend, that's saying God is love. We are loved. We are not stupid, but treasured. We make mistakes. We certainly do. And life can be hard. We all know that. Life can be hard. And that's why we need a guide. But the good news is there is a guide. There's a good shepherd. And it's not a sign of weakness that we need that guide. It's a sign of that we're actually healthy and recognize that we need help. So the psalm goes on, "I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures." Now I'm sort of breaking it down perhaps a little into segments that aren't the traditional segments, but I think these two pieces go together here. Let's start off on the green pastures. Green pastures conjures up an image like this for me of perhaps a European pasture, a beautiful meadow, lush green with the sheep in the meadow. Or that could be in the northeast of America. That was not what the scene would have been like in the Middle East, or is like today in the Middle East. The shepherding scene looks much more like this. It's dry, it's barren, it's infertile. So we have to sort of switch our view of what green pastures mean. I think if we think that lying down in green pastures is all about just staying where we are, staying in our comfort zone, circumstances being perfect for us, and just sort of enjoying life for the rest of our days, that's probably an unrealistic expectation. And I think we all get that. But I think there's something in us that wants to make our environment like that. We want to control our environment. We want to keep life comfortable. If life isn't comfortable, we think there must be something wrong. We're making mistakes. We're doing something wrong, or life's just unfair. But if we think about the Middle Eastern terrain of shepherding, where the grass is sparse, the green pastures are areas where the rocks have grass, have vegetation to eat, but it's not lush. The grass grows around rocks that retain moisture from previous rainfalls, which are very sporadic, or from dew or from humidity in the air. And little bits of grass grow up around the rocks, and the sheep find that vegetation. And the shepherd's job is to help keep moving to find new grass once they've eaten the previous grass. So this isn't about life being perfect. It's about having a shepherd who can guide us. And I think this is a key issue for us, because we want to maintain our comfort. And there are voices telling us that when life goes wrong, or when we're out of control, that we want to panic, and like calamity has fallen upon us. We probably feel like that a little bit at the moment. I think the current circumstances of the pandemic just show us that our sense of control is an illusion. What this section of the psalm, I think, is telling us is that it's okay to have needs. It's okay to have concerns. It's normal not to have everything together and to have total control over our lives. But we need a guide. And so in the voice of Jesus, I think we can hear is the voice that Jesus spoke in the Sermon on the Mount about, don't worry, consider the lilies of the field, consider the birds of the air. Don't worry about what tomorrow brings. Be grateful for what we have today. And this term, I shall not want, which kind of means I lack nothing, is really an attitude of thankfulness and gratefulness for what we have right now in the present moment, rather than stressing out about what's going to happen tomorrow. Difficult to do, but I think as we listen to the voice of Jesus, we can trust the shepherd. We can trust this loving presence in our life to guide us and to keep us moving forward, even though it may feel actually quite uncomfortable. The psalm goes on, he leads me beside still waters, he restores my soul. This sheep find it hard to lie down. We just said in the previous section, he makes me lie down in green pastures. Sheep find it hard to lie down. And the reason for that is because they'll only lie down when they're not hungry, or when they're not afraid of a predator, or when they're not bugged by various pests and parasites, or when they're not being intimidated by more aggressive members of their flock. As I mentioned, there's a sort of complex social hierarchy. They'll only lie down when they're relaxed. And I think that's an interesting metaphor for the various voices that forbid us to rest. This term still, in still waters, is the word for rest. And I think we struggle to lie down. We struggle to rest in our culture. And part of that is because of these intimidating voices which say, if you rest, you're going to fall behind. If you rest, you won't be good enough. If you rest, you're obviously not good enough. You must be weak. There's something wrong with you. If you feel overwhelmed, there must be something wrong with you. And we're addicted to performance. We're addicted to a sense of identity from what we do rather than from who we are. It's what we produce and how we perform that dictates how we feel about ourselves. And that's just a crushing, a toxic way of thinking about life, of thinking about ourselves. So we can listen for another voice. And that voice, I think, is saying, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. We've been given permission to rest. It's normal to rest. It's healthy to rest. Some of us right now, perhaps the greatest frustration in our lives, the greatest discomfort, is the fact that we're having to rest. There's not enough to do. For some of us, In the current situation, there's too much to do. We're overwhelmed. I mean, it's find time to rest and give ourselves permission and give one another permission to rest. Let's listen for the voice of Jesus that calls us to rest. It goes on, he leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. This term righteousness, zedek in the Hebrew, can also be translated justice. And some of the translations would say, translate this, he leads me in straight paths. And there's this sense of righteousness and justice being a straight path. As we listen for the voice of Jesus in this, I sense it's walk in straight lines. Yet let your yes be yes and your no be no. I think we very often get emotionally manipulated by other people or allow ourselves to be manipulated by other people where we chop and change. But how do you want me to be like this? Do you want me to be like that? We're worried about saying the wrong thing, worried about offending people. I think what we've been called to here is to be just, to be kind, to make decisions and choices based on what's right rather than what's best for us, or not make choices that would preference other people over another group of people, but to not walk around in circles, to be just and honest and walk in a straight line. Sheep actually walk in straight lines and until they're redirected. So, you know, we can forgive people who treat us badly, be kind to people who don't necessarily treat us well, perhaps being less worried about offending people and what people think about us, and walking straightly. Moves on, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. The valley of the shadow is the translation literally here. It doesn't actually say death, but this term for the valley of the shadow has become associated with death. It's a term that was used a lot in the book of Job, which we looked at in the first part of this series. But it's not just death. It's like dark, cold times that we all experience. And I think the interesting thing here is that shepherds don't control the elements. Shepherds can control the sheep or lead the sheep, but they're not guaranteed the sheep that there's not going to be danger, that there's not going to be difficulties. They're going to have to go through certain valleys. There will be problems ahead. Weather won't always be good. So there's a lot of control that the shepherd does not have. I think that can help us actually challenge our view of God. If the shepherd here is the metaphor for God, that there are certain things that perhaps we should not be looking to God for control over. Again, we want control. Control is important for us because that's what makes us feel safe. But what we do have is a God that can guide us through difficult times. We have a shepherd that will take us through and out the valley. And it's a question of trust as we go into dark, cold, perhaps at times despairing situations. So I think that the voice here that we hear, or the various voices that we hear here are, this is your fault. You're never going to get out of this situation. God is judging you, because if God is in control of everything, then God must be quite happy for you to suffer. You've been abandoned. And I think that leads us to feel that we're victims, that our only recourse is self-pity. And that's a slippery slope. That's a valley with a very slippery slope. But one that I think we get caught in very frequently. Whereas the voice of Jesus here, I think, would be what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 28, right at the end of Matthew's gospel, where he says, "And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." In other words, no matter what, I'm with you, even through an apocalypse, if you like. And we might feel like we're in one of those right now. And so the important thing for us is to cultivate a sense of God's presence when we're not in the valley. I mean, saying, "Oh, don't worry, God's with you," could just be a platitude. That's probably, you know, not all that helpful when we're in difficult times. But if when we're in the green pastures or when we're in the beside the still waters, we practice experiencing God and cultivate a connection to God. Then when we are in the valley, we're more able to have that experience of God's presence with us. So perhaps Jesus' voice here is saying, "I'm with you." So practice experiencing that when things aren't so difficult, so that you can experience me still there with you, even when it's really hard to know that or hard to feel that. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. These are sort of classic tools of the shepherd. The rod was more of a club to ward off wild animals. The staff is more of a stick. I mean, it's in modern times, it's become the crook, but it's just really a stick to tap the sheep and keep them out of mischief, keep them on the right path. You know, it's interesting that they've used, they're called a source of comfort. I wonder if perhaps the voice of Jesus here is, listen to your pain, listen to your frustration. Like, we all do things and have habits and habitual tendencies that sort of get us off the right track. Things that cause pain for ourselves, things that cause pain for other people. We very frequently run from our pain. We don't want to face it. And that can cause us to keep getting off the track. Whereas if we face some of our pain, maybe that's the pain of frustration, like there are certain roadblocks to us, that we our inclination is to sort of steamroller over them. Maybe if you listen more to some of those obstacles, the things where we're frustrated, listen more to our pain, we might be able to stay on course a little bit more. That might be the guidance we need. So Jesus' voice there could be pain can be your friend. That might not sound super comforting, but in the long term, maybe it is, as we come to terms with it. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup runs over. This is imagery of a feast where the guest who was the sort of honored guest would have their head anointed with oil, and this sort of imagery of overflowing cups. It's revelry and feasting. And it could almost sound like gloating over your enemies, right? I'm going to sort of eat a feast in front of my enemies to sort of gloat over them. I don't think that's what this means. In fact, you know, if we're listening for the voice of Jesus, Jesus clearly said, "Forgive your enemies," right? So we know that. But I think there's a couple of ways we could look at this. One of them is I think we get easily intimidated by our enemies, and our enemies aren't necessarily just people. They might be, you know, people we have conflict with or people who seem against us. But our enemies are all kinds of things, different issues and struggles that challenge us and haunt us maybe and feel like they just follow after us. And I think we could interpret this as making a choice, a decision that we're not going to let those things intimidate us. We're going to sort of almost celebrate in front of them. Jesus said in John chapter 16, he said the following, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." Jesus seems to be saying here that you're going to have problems. There's going to be difficulties. We're going to have struggles. We're going to get intimidated, but don't worry about it. And as we celebrate in front of them, in front of these struggles, and perhaps take them a little less seriously, they don't crush us. They don't intimidate us as much. In fact, they begin to shrink down in size, and we see them a lot more for what they are. That's perhaps one way in which we can listen to the voice of Jesus. Another way, and this is an interpretation of this section favored by many rabbis, is that this is a meal of reconciliation. In the Middle Eastern culture, eating together is a sign of acceptance, a sign of reconciliation. And so this is actually a feast of reconciliation with enemies, not necessarily literally, but metaphorically, where we kind of give thanks for and welcome our enemies, whether it's people with whom we've had conflict or struggles in our lives, where we celebrate the fact that it's very often those struggles that have brought about positive change in our lives. I think that's our reality, right? It's not in the easy times or with easy people or people we find easy that we are challenged or to change for the good. It's in some of the struggle. And so this is a celebration. You know, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, "But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." I wonder if Jesus is almost insinuating there, look, you know, maybe we have something to gain, something to learn, even from our enemies, be they people or be they challenges. "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life." Some have said that perhaps goodness and mercy are two sheepdogs carefully training behind the sheep flock. Now, I, you know, They didn't really have sheepdogs back then. So I think that's a little bit of a stretch. But what I love about that analogy is that sheepdogs, which are beautiful creatures, are not all that different to wolves. Wolves are like the arch enemy, if you like, of the sheep. They're predators. But a sheepdog is just being domesticated and trained, doesn't behave all that differently from a wolf, except in certain regards. And yet, so they're not that all that different. And yet one is a predator and one is a carer. And I think very often we can sort of look over our shoulder, as it were, at life and wonder what's following behind us. And we can see life and look at it either as a wolf or as a sheepdog. Now, clearly, there's reason to be cautious and recognize that there are difficulties in life and certain difficult situations that seem to track with us. But there's also a lot of good in life, a lot of mercy in life. I mean, we can think about the driving force of the universe being love, and that overcomes all the hate, all the fear, all the darkness. I think in many ways this psalm is helping us to make choices about how we see life and how we respond to life. We can be paranoid, if you like, and listen to the voices that say things are going to go wrong, you'll never make it, don't trust anybody, you're a failure, and you don't deserve mercy in the first place. I mean, those I think are very real voices. We can trust those voices and listen to those voices, or we can listen to the voice of Jesus. And the voice of Jesus, for instance, here's what Jesus says in John 15, verse 9, as the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. Struggles, suffering are a reality, but so is love. Mercy and goodness mean that love is the greatest. And so, we can respond accordingly rather than in a paranoid fashion. In Luke's gospel, it says, for the Son of Man came to find and restore the lost. There's that, I think, a beautiful sense there of like we're being pursued by love. We're being pursued by Jesus. The spirit of the living Christ is after us and almost like hunting us down. That's what's training us. That's a different way, I think, of looking at life. We are being followed, but we don't need to be paranoid about it. And then finally it says, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Beautiful ending. It sort of comes back full circle to being in the presence of God and cultivating that presence. In John 17, Jesus prayed, my prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us so that the world may believe that you have sent me. So again, we have a tradition here at Cedar Ridge of cultivating the presence of God in our lives through contemplative practice. This week, we have materials for this series that could help us just take 2 or 3 minutes each day to meditate on a different part of this psalm each day cultivate the presence of God in our lives through that. It's something we practice daily and as a means to grow in the art of it. It doesn't just happen instantly. It's something we have to grow in. So do take advantage of those materials. You can download them online and just take a few minutes a day. But I think as we do that, we can have a deeper sense of being in God, of being in Christ, if you like, and Christ in us. This sense of oneness with God, rather than a sense of being abandoned. We're dwelling in God. We're in the house of the Lord forever. Very often we don't feel like that, but we can cultivate a sense of that. So thanks for tracking with me through this psalm. Hopefully those meditations will help you as you reflect on it and meditate on it. We're going to do communion now together. We're all in our homes, but we have bread and wine or juice and crackers or anything edible and drinkable. Through which we can celebrate communion and perhaps just remember the presence of God. We're remembering Jesus, so remember Jesus' presence with us, presence no matter what our circumstances are like right now. We might be in green pastures or still waters or in a valley. We might feel intimidated by enemies. Let's remember the presence of God. As we eat the bread and wine, we can maybe see it as a reconciliation meal, reconciliation with God, acceptance. We could celebrate in front of our enemies. Maybe that's people who we forgive and are grateful to them for the influence they've had in our lives, or circumstances in our lives that have been intimidating and challenging. Or we might just be eating a meal as a representation of the provision in our lives. And we can be grateful for a meal of thankfulness, if you like, to be grateful for what we have, even though we may have still concerns about tomorrow, but we have a good shepherd that's with us as we go into tomorrow. So whatever way we celebrate communion, let's remember that we're celebrating together. We are not alone. We are one in spirit, and God is with us.